Hi, I'm Rich Shea with another episode of Recon. This time we're going to talk about Uwe Rosenberg's Lahav, the Inland Port, his new two-player game based on the theme from Lahav, but frankly based on the mechanics from Aura and Labora in many ways. I'll go through how you play the game and the structure and expand on that to help you understand what you might want to do while you're playing. The Inland Port is played over 12 turns. Each turn will have a variable number of moves in it, and a new set of buildings will become available for purchase. On your turn, on each of your moves, you'll either buy a building or use a building. Bought buildings and used buildings move to the unavailable spot, then in later turns you can use them again to take advantage of their capabilities. As in Aura and Labora, there's a board with a wheel, and each turn the wheel advances on both players' boards, and then each player will have a number of actions to take on that turn. Like in Aura and Labora, it's always going to be an odd number. Basically, the first player will switch between turns, and the starting player will get one more action each turn. The first several turns, you get 3, then 5, then 7, and for the last 3 turns, 9 actions that make up the turn split between the two players. Each player will get 36 actions over the course of the game. An action consists of buying a building or using a building. As in Aura and Labora, each of the 6 spaces on your board will have a different value each turn as the spinner moves around. When you buy or use a building, you move it to the space with a 0 value. On future turns, that will change to 2, 3, 4. 4 get a coin, and 4 sale of the building. Unlike Aura and Labora, you don't continue to sweep the buildings around. You will lose them if you don't use them. It can be a little tricky to keep track of how many actual actions have been taken. If you sum the number of buildings in the player's 0 spaces, that should correspond to how many actions have been taken. I also found it was convenient to track your actions by taking one of the extra counters along the bottom track of your warehouse. And the game board conveniently shows which player is the start player for each turn, and which buildings come out based on the letter of the turn number, A through L. The only confusing point is that the spinner indicator starts on the current turn, and as soon as you move it, it's actually pointing to the next turn. There are 5 resources in the game. Coins, which are handled very directly. You get coins and you spend coins. And the other 4 resources, fish, grain, wood, and clay. These resources are managed in a less direct fashion, and I'll talk about that below when I talk about what the buildings do. Each player starts with 3 francs, 4 fish, 3 clay, 2 wood, and a single grain. 5 buildings start available on turn A, and every other turn, 2 to 3 buildings come out, until on the last turn, every building becomes available. Buildings have a specific cost in wood and or clay, coins, or combined food spent. Each building also has a value in coins or victory points at the end of the game. Half that value will be acquired if you sell or have to sell the building at any point during the game. Selling a building is not an action, but buying a building is. Most buildings also do something productive. How many times it does the thing depends on which space it's on when it's played. So each of the basic actions a building does will happen 2, 3, or 4 times, or possibly 4 times, and you get a 1-coin bonus because you left the building in for 1 turn longer. It's also possible that a building will have a single action, which is almost always in addition to the based on the number on the wheel action. For instance, the farmland will move your grain value up 1 for each space on the wheel, but it will then move clay and wood 1 also. There are 31 buildings all together. Towards the end of the game, you get buildings that are about getting points, or buildings that you buy so that your wealth increases, but those buildings don't take any action. There are 8 buildings that don't take any action or do anything productive. They're just there for points at the end of the game. As you'd expect, there's one with a bonus point for each leftover of the four commodity items. There's one that just lets you spend a lot of clay and wood together to get points. And then there's one that gives you 10 bonus points for each of the four bonus point, they're called anchor buildings, for each of the four anchor buildings that get their points based on the commodities you have left. Then there's the zoo, and that lets you buy some points with some food, and the Normandy Bridge, where you throw in a ton of money, 30, and you get back a bunch of money, 50, good towards the end of the game. All the other buildings either make things for you or produce money for selling off things. Now, this is probably a good time to explain the warehouse. The warehouse is where you keep track of how much of each of the four goods that you have. It's a little strange in that there's a grid that determines the actual value. Each space to the right is an increased value of 1. Each row up is an increased value of 3. The first two rows go from 0 to 10. The second two rows from 0 to 9. The fifth row goes from 0 to 8. The sixth from 0 to 7. The seventh from 0 to 5. The top row goes from 0 to 2. Now, the first space in each of those rows is actually worth, and I'm going up, 0, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, and 21. So the value of a space is the row value plus the value along the bottom that basically corresponds to how far to the right the space is. This can be confusing because it means that the same value is actually represented by multiple spaces in the warehouse. For instance, if you had 10 grain, it could be on the 0 row 10 space, the 3 row 7 space, the 6 row 4 space, or the 9 row 1 space. They all represent 10 grain, but as we'll see ahead, they actually are slightly different in terms of how convenient it is to expend it. When you spend goods to buy things, you can move the goods marker 1 to the left to expend 1. You can move it straight down 1 row to expend 3. Or you can move it 1 down, 1 to the left to expend 4. Those are the permissible individual spend things. You can't actually move 1 down to the right to only expend 2. It's just not allowed. The problem with this for the players is that if you are bumped up against the left edge of the warehouse wall, the only expenditure you can make is 3, even if you only need to spend 1. So it becomes a matter of navigating your resource counters in the warehouse to get maximum benefit of both sales and acquisitions. Because when we talk about production, we'll realize we have this same problem. Although you can bounce up against the top of the warehouse, it's not as likely as bouncing up against the left or right-hand edge of the warehouse, limiting your production, the same way that bumping up against the left warehouse wall limits your spending efficiency. When you acquire resources, the least efficient ones will move the resource counter to the right, the number of spaces indicated on the spinner. So the hardware store, for instance, will let you move either wood or clay 2, 3, or 4 to the right. Now, obviously, if you could make a move up, that would be more. A move to the right is 1 resource, a move up is 3 resources, and a move up to the left is 2 resources. Take my word for it. So there are 8 buildings in the game that move resources to the right. Some of them are simple and cheap. Some of them are a little more expensive and complicated. For instance, the hardware store, you choose to move wood or clay, the indicated number. The farmland, you have to move grain, the indicated number, but clay and wood move 1 as well. The clay mound moves clay to the right, plus an additional clay to the right move, whereas the wood company just moves wood to the right. Further down in the slightly more expensive D deck, the marketplace lets you move any one of the 4 to the right, the indicated number. And then even further down, the church square moves both your food to the right, and the building site moves both wood and clay to the right. Now, it's all very well to get these increases, and you also want to do that because if you have your resource near the left edge, the other kinds of increase may very well result in bumping up against the wall and not getting the full benefit of the increase. So you actually want to have your resources further over to the right so that you have more freedom to move them around. It's a little hard to get your head around unless you're looking at the warehouse, and then it becomes obvious. The pier costs 10 coins, but it's worth 22 at the end of the game, so you're already well ahead, and its movement is to let you take the designated number of moves, plus two more, to the right, spreading them out among the goods any way you want. This is the effect of the white wild card arrows on the building. There are also rainbow arrows where you have to split the moves among different things, and you don't have as much flexibility. The total number of moves are divided. And also, of course, that means enough of your goods to use the available moves have to be free to move in the indicated direction. That's probably more confusing than it has to be, too. So we covered the A buildings except the grocery store. The grocery store is the other kind of building. It gives you one coin for the designated number of moves, and it also lets you move each of your food, fish and grain, one to the right. Now the next kind of move is moving a commodity up to the left, where you have to worry about bumping into the left-hand wall. There's one building that does this for each of the four commodities. There's one building, the Craftsman's Yard, that does it as a wild card, plus one additional move. And there's the Mason's Guild, which lets you make the moves, but you have to make each individual one to a different commodity. So if you had four moves with the Mason's Guild, you'd have to move each of the commodities once. So you'd want to make sure that none of them were up against the wall. Now, moving up to the left is an increase of two for each of the moves. So it's much more efficient than the same number of moves to the right. Now, a move up to the right is even more efficient because it increases the value by four. But it turns out that there's not much availability of this in the game. The farm lets you move wheat up to the right, the number of turns designated, but then you have to move it back down one of them. So it's actually N minus one. Can be better than the bakehouse, but not a lot better. A four move with the bakehouse is eight, and a four move with the farm is nine. So it's not a huge difference. And farm costs more at two clay and two brick, as opposed to the bakehouse, just two brick. And it's only worth two more coins at the end of the game. The guild hall is the other move up to the right, but it's a rainbow one, so you have to do each of your commodities. You're a little more likely to be able to move all the commodities up and to the right. You're a little less likely, based on my limited game experience so far, to be up against the right-hand wall. Possible, but nowhere near as likely. There are five buildings that let you spend coins or commodities to get something. The fish market lets you spend the designated number of coins to move the fish marker up and to the right. So that's the easiest way to increase fish, but remember, you're spending money to do that. The wood trader lets you spend a coin and two food the designated number of times to move wood straight up, once for each spent. You don't have to spend the whole thing, but you may. The restaurant lets you trade the designated number of food for two coins for each food point traded away. The weekly market lets you lower grain or fish straight down, and for each move straight down, you get four coins. But you can only do one of them, so it's either all fish or all grain for each move. And the business office is a rainbow arrow down to the left, and you can move each resource once up to end resources, but each move gets you five coins. So the weekly market is three for four coins. The business office is four for five coins. And the restaurant is a food for two coins, but of course there's a limited number of moves there. There are two buildings that just give you money. The grocery store that we talked about before, with one coin for each move and one grain and fish advancing one to the right. And there's the shipping line, which gives you three coins for each move. So that would be a maximum of 12 or 13 if you're getting the bonus coins, which is a pretty good haul, and you can make it happen. But of course, the shipping line's expensive. Now, one thing in this game is that, as in Ora and Labora, you can pay a coin to use another player's building. It sounds like a good, sneaky, mean strategy to break up the other player's momentum, or to get a building that you need to use. But remember, the coin isn't the only cost. Yes, sure, you use the other person's building on them, haha, but you've also made sure that that building goes to zero and they don't have to worry about having to sell it off. Meanwhile, one of your buildings goes unused and might become closer to the point where you can't use it, or you have to decide which building drifts away and you only get half cost for it. If you play cleverly, you never have to sell off a building, but that might result in you passing up an opportunity to use an opponent's building that would actually be better for you. It's why this game is thinky fun, but I urge you not to be too analysis paralysis about it, because I think once you start a chain of using each other's buildings, then it becomes much harder to calculate what's going on. So the buildings we haven't talked about in detail are the ones that just give you bonus points. The zoo, pay 15 food, have 20 points at the end if you don't lose it, which you won't because it comes out on the second to last turn. The Normandy Bridge, pay 30 coin, have 50 points at the end. The Town Hall, pay 8 wood, 8 clay, and have 26 points at the end. The Fish Factory, Wood Factory, Brick Factory, and Grain Silo each get you 1 point for each of the related commodities left in your warehouse at the end of the game. And the Dock gives you 10 points for each of those factories that you own at the end of the game. Now, some of the buildings still do something, but are worth a lot of points. The pier, for instance, costs 10 coins, makes the best move to the right in the game, but is worth 22 at the end. The business office, which you can use to get 5 coins for each commodities, but only one at a time, costs 7 wood and 5 clay, but it's worth 30 points at the end. Frankly, a better deal than the town hall, and you can use it. The town hall is almost pity points for people who saved up those commodities and then didn't get the factory. The Mason's Guild is 6 wood and 3 clay, pretty expensive. It has the rainbow move up to the left, which is a pretty good move, but it's worth 20 points at the end of the game. It's the same deal. The weekly market costs 10 food to buy. It lets you sell off fish and grain, but it's also worth 16 points at the end of the game. A lot of the buildings are like that. The value, if you can keep it till the end of the game, is not actually commensurate with the cost. This is the thing that's most like Le Havre, where there doesn't seem to be a close relationship to how much you spent for a building to how much it's worth. It's just the designer's idea of the combination of what you spent versus what you get if you hold it to the end of the game, plus the functionality you'll get out of it during the game. So you have to pay close attention to that when you're making decisions. A building that you don't intend to use might be worth a significant number of points anyways, and of course, if you're not going to use the building, well, maybe your opponent would like to use it a lot too. And you get the benefit of the points, a couple of extra coins, and you get to annoy your opponent. And what's more fun than that? So at the end of the game, you just add up the coins you have and the value of the buildings you kept, plus any bonuses for factories or the dock that you calculate. The highest total is the winner. In case of a tie, the designer urges you to play again. Well, frankly, if this ever becomes a tournament event, I'm pretty sure that the tiebreaker will be leftover coins followed by number of buildings you still own. That's just my guess, and if I'm the GM, that's how it's going to be. But you could just play the game again. It's pretty short. I like this game a lot. Now, the problem with simplified two-player games like this is that you strip off a lot of the theme, and you end up seeing more of the abstraction. The man behind the curtain is significantly more visible. You're going to think more in terms of points rather than actual resources. When you're playing Le Havre, it's easiest to think of the resources as the resources that they represent. It actually works in your brain that way. You're trying to get steel. You're not trying to get the steel token. You're trying to get steel. I mean, the manufacturing process in Le Havre is complicated enough that your brain is going to translate it into the thematic actions. That's what I do anyways. It's probably true for most people. In this game, the abstractions are a little closer to you, and you're going to be thinking about it more in terms of this. Now, that takes away from the thematicness of the game, although it's built in here pretty well, and I enjoy it. But it also means that you can treat it more clearly as a puzzle. For instance, when you look at the buildings, you should think about weaving the counters for the resources back and forth in the warehouse to get the most benefit. So you want to zig to the right, and then of course it's going to be more easily available to zig up to the left. But then you might have to zig to the right some more to be able to do that again, or decide now it's time for the buildings that let you zig up to the right. If you really think of a path for your resource counters in there, then you can build them up. And sometimes you have to accept that there's 4 resources. You're not going to be magnificently stockpiled with all 4. You probably have to pick 2 to really concentrate on, and in the other 2, we'll be struggling along. Now that's okay, because the building costs are highly variable, And even later in the game, some of the buildings are relatively inexpensive. Of the 17 buildings that either cost just clay or cost clay combined with wood, only 4 of them cost 4, 5, 6, or 8. The rest cost between 1 and 3. The average amount of clay for the less expensive buildings is about 2. Of the 16 buildings whose partial cost is wood, or total cost, only 4 of them cost 5 and up, with one at each cost 5, 6, 7, and 8. And actually, none of them cost 4, with the average cost for the less expensive wood buildings being 2 wood. There are 5 buildings that you buy with food. They cost 6, 8, 10, 12, and 15, for an average of just above 10. But remember, food's going to accumulate like the other things, but there's not as many places to spend it, except the handful of buildings, and of course, trying to get coins for victory points, and the bonus at the end. Only 5 buildings are purchased with coins. The farmland and clay mound at the beginning are 1 and 3 coins, so people are going to be able to buy them with their initial 3 coin layout. Pier, Normandy Bridge, and the dock cost, well, not a lot. Pier's 10, the dock's only 7, and that could be a lot of points. On average, 20, of course, if you split the factories, so it's a really good deal. And the Normandy Bridge is also worth 20 extra points, more than its cost, if you can accumulate enough coins to get it. It's a great way to turn the coins from food into extra points at the end. And the pier turns 10 coins into 22 coins. So it's actually, as a percentage, more profitable than the Normandy Bridge, and you might actually get to use the action. In fact, it can be pretty critical right at the end, because you can move some things over to the right, so you can then move them up a little bit as part of your long action at the end. So that's the game. I like it a lot. Strategy hints. Think about chaining actions together, and order is important. You'll often find that you have to slide to the right before you slide up to get clear of the wall, and then when you're purchasing, you might want to delay a little bit so that you get the increase in goods before you spend them in a way so you can spend them efficiently. But of course, you have to keep an eye on your neighbor. This whole game is about keeping an eye on your neighbor. Good thing there's only one, so that he doesn't grab that building, or she, grab that building just before you were going to buy it. The game's about accumulating points. The point engines are tiny because it's a short game, but they're very important. I really think that among two players, this is as much about efficiency as about getting the point engines. You can always get the resources you need somehow, just not in the quantity you really want. And accumulating the resources so that you can spend them the most efficient way later is very tricky. It's why this game is challenging and fun. Otherwise, if it weren't set up quite this way, I don't think it would be quite as exciting. Before we finish up with my opinion on Le Havre, the Inland Port, and you can probably guess it's pretty positive, I thought I'd go over the broad strategic implications of the game. There's 12 turns, which will be 72 total moves, 36 per player. And there's 31 buildings, so buy all the buildings. 8 of the buildings don't have any action. That leaves 23 buildings and up to 41 non-buy actions, which means each building gets used about twice. Now, a few are probably too weak to use twice, but it takes 3 turns to get from 0 to 4, and even the lowliest building looks good at 4 actions plus a coin. But there are buildings that you'll use before they get up to 4 and a coin. In fact, most of them. Every building is good value for cost in terms of end game points, so try not to lose them. And think about a good as worth no more than a point at game end, and you'll end up making good decisions. It's not super difficult to make good decisions in this game. The idea is, of course, you have to edge out your opponent, probably by just a little, once he knows how to play. So, enjoy the game. Now, looking at this game, quite frankly, you could easily see where it could be expanded. There are just gaps in capabilities. For instance, there's no fish up to the right. And this game could easily become expanded by doubling the number of buildings and adding 2 more player wheels. That'd be great, I think. Or just adding the buildings and mixing them in so that you get a random draw for each of the 12 turns. So you're not sure which buildings are going to come out, but that would make it a little less thinky. But it would still be a great, fun game. The game's not super heavy. It plays quickly. It's pretty easy to teach. The production values are decent for what it is. It is perhaps a little overpriced if you pay list, but that's the way of the world. And the only other criticism is the really nice player aid, which just lists the costs of each of the buildings, could basically have been expanded to print the capabilities of the buildings on it, or maybe even made a little bigger. I fully expect that there'll be a sheet out on BoardGameGeek soon that expands that, and I'll print out a copy and laminate it to put it in there. Actually, I'll make two, one for each of the players. Well, thanks for listening. I know this recon is a little shorter than some of the others, but the game's a little shorter. So watch for my next one, and also some event coverage. If you're doing this linearly, I'm hoping to have an interview with Rob Kircher about TotalCon 2013 that just wrapped up. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about the previous year's experiences. Last year, in 2012, I played my way to chairman of the board. This year, I just taught my way to being the guy who taught the most games. In some ways, that's actually better for the hobby and as exciting for me, frankly. Thanks for listening. Bye.